What's going on, guys? Brand new podcast today. It's kind of a treat for me. This was a real treat for me. One of my heroes, author Jeff Perlman, joins me to talk about his new book, The Last Folk Hero, The Life and Myth of Bo Jackson. Bo knows. Man, brings you back to your childhoods. Talking Bo Jackson. My dad used to take me down to Kansas City Royal games to watch Bo when I was a kid. And who could forget his career as a running back as well. One of the most fascinating sports figures, really, of my childhood. And Perlman is the most in-depth sports writer you'll find. He may be the most in-depth writer in general. He's one of the guys who inspired me to get into this business, and I got to sit down with him for about a half hour today to talk about his new book and just writing and life in general. It was really cool to shoot the shit with him. I want to thank our friends at MechDyne, the MechDyne Corporation, for sponsoring the podcast as well. Really good stuff. There is so many opportunities right now. Everybody's looking to hire. Like, right now is the perfect time if you wanted to switch jobs to make a move at this point in time, because there are a lot of great companies out there hiring. MechDyne is one of them. They're a technology company. Actually, they're technically called a collection of technology companies that remove obstacles to insight and understanding, located in Marshalltown. Really good people. I know the CEO well. He's a really close friend of mine, and this is a phenomenal company. They have positions open, remote positions all over the world. You could go and work as well as in Marshalltown, Iowa. Check them out at MechDyne.com today. I could not endorse them more. Here is my interview with one of the great writers, one of the great sports writers of all time, one of the great writers of my generation. Jeff Perlman joins me to promote his book, The Last Folk Hero, The Life and Myth of Bo Jackson. All right, Jeff, well, I was just telling my wife right before I came down to my office to do this that I interview sports figures constantly. I think I'm more nervous to interview you because you're like one of my heroes, man. So thank you for taking some time for this. I don't want to make you blush, but it's the truth.
You should be very nervous. There's a lot of pressure that comes with interviewing a. I don't want to puncture any of your takes here, but I'm literally wearing basketball shorts under this brown waffle shirt that I got in probably 1998. So I hope I live up to, if you're a big fan of slovenly, unshaved sports writers.
I am. I love sports. I love the two writers Slinging Yang is one of my favorite pods because I'm a geek like you, just at a different kind of like level and area, but like, I'm just a totally writing geek and I just love media. And no, I love the concept of what you do there. Like when you have the whole concept of your podcast is just different types of writers from all over the globe. And you guys just geek out on it. I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. I just want to say though, also, like, it's kind of interesting. I'm sure you've learned this through the years too. Like, you know, like I used to get nervous interviewing people, or I'd get apprehensive about interviewing people. And then at some point you realize like everyone is just bullshitting their way through and we're all trying to figure out our way through. And like, yeah, people, I'm the same exact, my wife will tell you, my parents will tell you, like, I'm the same loser I was when I hadn't written 10 books, or I'm the same loser I was before whatever happened. And like, people assume that you're different, or people assume that something has changed because of quote unquote status, but you're just trying to get your way through life, you know? And like, you know what I mean? Like, we're all just trying to make our way through. Yeah.
Totally get it. Your Bonds book.
You should be very nervous.
Your Bonds book was, I had read sports books before that one. Your book on Bonds was the first one that actually inspired me, though. Like, I remember reading it in my childhood home, in my childhood bedroom, and thinking like, okay, this book's like doing something different to me intellectually, though. And I can't explain it, but did you have a moment like that where that was like one of the first moments where I was like, hey, I kind of want to do something like this, reading the Bonds book.
Well, first of all, you just made me feel really old. So that was cool. Like, now I get more and more of that. That comes with aging when everyone's like, oh, I grew up reading you. And you're like, what? I certainly did. I mean, for me, I mean, there are a lot of them, but like one was, I grew up on the street, Emerald Lane, in a small town in New York, upstate New York, Mayopac, New York. And my parents would not get Sports Illustrated because nobody, it was, you know, weekly and it was kind of expensive and nobody else in my family cared about sports. But I had a neighbor named John Daly who lived one house down to my right. And he would bundle up his Sports Illustrated after a while and put them by the curb for the garbage. And I would go and take John Daly's Sports Illustrated. You probably didn't even know. I still have them under my bed, a bunch of them. And I would comb through the Sporting Illustrated and read through the Sporting Illustrated. And I just remember, like, I can still picture some of the covers I literally took from John Daly's house, just being blown away by it all. I don't know, the colors and the names and the writing and the pictures. And so that, for me, was a real impactful sort of situation.
Yeah, because Sports Ill was like, we all get the newspaper, but I was like, it's glossy, right? Like, it had like a different type of like packaging to it. I kind of know what you mean there. How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I'm 50.
Okay, so I'm 38, so you're not that much older than me.
But no.
I was kind of, when I went to journalism school, I kind of feel like I was kind of in the right spot at the right time because I was too young to really want to write for a newspaper, but I was still the internet hadn't really come around yet. So I was kind of like that first generation where that was really like a thing. Do you still, like, when you read a book, do you pick it up and hold the book like I'm doing with yours right now? Or are you like a Kindle guy? Cause
no.
I'm like an old school. Like, I still want the Des Moines Register at my doorstep. Like, it's odd how people are different like that.
I don't get a print newspaper anymore, which is kind of a bummer. And I actually, something I never thought would happen is I don't get Sports Illustrated anymore, which to me is crazy, but I don't. I was recently staying at a friend's house and he still got the magazine and I was like, oh, this is what it looks like. Like, I hadn't seen it. And, but book wise, I mean, every now and then I'll buy some, whatever, John Meacham, 500 page book. And you're like, maybe a Kindle would be good because this thing is weighing down my backpack.
Yeah.
But I like holding a book. I like feeling. I like bending pages. I like underlining. I like doing all that stuff. I do.
And they're kind of like trophies for me in my office, too. I love, like, the having the...
Is that the Alan Shipnuck, Phil Mickelson book?
Yeah, it is. Have you read that one yet?
No, but he's a friend of mine. I'm not a golf guy, but Alan's a good friend of mine.
That's one of my favorite. That would be top 10 sports books I've ever read, I think. And I couldn't put it down. I thought it was just fantastic. So that's... kind of a good segue into how it was we get into the Bo Jackson book, but Phil's one of those guys who I could see you writing a book about someday based on how you choose your topics. And that's kind of what I wanted to get into. Like, I have my power ratings on Perlman books, which we can get to later, but how do you choose your topics? Is it just people who are fascinating to you, or do you have a team behind you? How do you go about that?
I have a team of no one. I mean, my wife and my kids, I guess, a little, we talk. But I don't know. It can't just be fascinating to me. Like, that's not enough. Like, there are a million people. Like, I always say, I would love to write a book. There's a band called Blind Melon. They sang the song No Rain. And I'm fascinated by Blind Melon. I think Blind Melon is one of the great undiscovered, forgotten groups. They were discovered, but forgotten groups of all time. I think they were genius, blah, blah, blah. I would love to write a Blind Melon book, but nobody's going to read my Blind Melon book except maybe the living members of Blind Melon. So I always say, number one, it has to be a subject that fascinates me, that'll hold my interest for 2 years. Number two, it has to be a subject that hasn't been done thoroughly or hasn't been done in many, many, many years. And number three, it has to at least have some commercial possibility. There's no guarantees. My Clemens book did not sell well at all. That's all right. Some books sell great. You never know for sure, but I at least want it to be ballpark possible. So those are really what I think about. And it helps if you're an icon. Iconic players, iconic figures, air of mystery, that kind of stuff always helps.
So when I found out that you had the Bo Jackson book coming out, The Last Folk Hero, I was actually stunned that there hadn't been more done on him.
Yeah.
Like, because he's a guy who... I grew up in Southwest Iowa. We were an hour and a half from Kansas City, and he played for the Royals when I was a kid. And, like, he was... You know, going to a Royals game and watching him and George Brett. And, like, it was just anytime Bo came up, people would hold their breath. Were you surprised that hadn't been done on that? I think the last one I was reading through your notes was like 1990.
Well, he wrote an autobiography in 19, or, you know, he wrote Dick Schaap.
Dick Schaap, yeah.
Or did Bo Knows Bo in 1990. And there was another book actually, this pisses me off. I haven't talked about this with anyone, but there's there was another book that was really actually pretty good about Bo Jackson. And it was about Bo and the Boz and sort of that era. And I actually used it. And then for some reason, I left it out of my acknowledgements. I mean, of the bibliography. I just totally forgot, which really pissed me off. Anyway, but there really hasn't been any. That was a Bo and a bunch, kind of an era book. There haven't been a ton of Bo books. And it's surprising, but not surprising. It's surprising because he's Bo Jackson. He's enormous. And he was iconic. And it's not surprising because if you look at his career numbers, he was there. He came and went so long. There's no Pro Football Hall of Fame case. There's no Baseball Hall of Fame case. I'm not sure many kids under a certain age know who Bo Jackson is. So he didn't have a Mickey Mantle career or a Derek Jeter career. You know, he didn't, or an Eric Dickerson or Jim Brown. Like, he just wasn't around that long. So I do understand why people, when they're thinking about what books to write, overlook him. And I was, my agent was a little skeptical of the idea. He was a little dubious about the idea. And last week I found out I made the bestseller list. And I was like, I always feel good about that when I like when I know a topic is going to be good and it winds up working out. Like, that actually brings me some joy. USFL was the same way, where I just knew, I'm like, this is a good book. I know this is a good book. And they made the list. So that's amazing.
Wasn't there a part of the USFL book, it's been years since I read it, but where you had said something like you had pitched to do a book on that years before and they told you no? Or you were in like a class or something like that where you did some research on it. What was the backstory?
No, you're thinking, I wrote when I was a senior in high school, Mayo Pack High School in Mayo Pack, New York, my senior thesis, we had to write, I was in AP English, it was probably my 180 class.
Yeah.
And I had to write, they said, the teacher, Eric Height, 20-page paper, final paper, subject of your choice. And I was like, downfall of the USFL. It was like, oh, okay. Let me do it.
Total nerd stuff there, man.
God. Pick a nerdier topic. And I end up handing in 40 pages instead of 20. I always picture, like, I always think, like, now I'm an adjunct professor. And I think about, like, you're a teacher, like, you want 20 pages and you get 40. And you're like, Jesus Christ, no. And I got a B on the paper. But that was but then later on, my agent, I was like, USFL. He's like, nobody wants an effing USFL book. So, but I kept at it. I just really believed in the idea. So,
yeah, no, that was a good one, especially for a guy my age, because it was just before my time. I don't remember. I mean, I wasn't really around. I was a Herschel Walker fan, though. I was a, believe it or not, and that has a whole different meaning. That has a whole different meaning now. I was a Cowboys fan with my dad. Walker gets traded to the Vikings, and I've been a lifelong Vikings fan ever since. It was one of the worst moments of a terrible moment for fandom, right? Because you lose out on all the Super Bowls, and then I've been with the perennial loser ever since.
You're speaking to a lifelong Jet fan, so you're not going to get any sympathy from me.
My guy, Breece Hall, is playing for you guys. Yeah.
Well, now he's on the injury list for the
year. Yeah, he played at Iowa State. He did a big NIL deal with us, and he's a great guy.
Is he? I was going to say, did you know he'd be great? Because he was the second round pick, and everyone was like, man, that was a steal, that was a steal, that was a steal. Did you know that he'd be this good?
Yes. Actually, Matt Campbell said before he had ever taken a snap, Matt Campbell told me that he'll be the best running back in Iowa State history, which...
Would that be Troy Davis?
Yes, there you go. And Troy Davis was... So that was actually a big controversy because Breece wanted to wear number 28, which was Troy Davis's number.
Yeah.
And a lot of the old guard did not like the fact that this kid from Kansas was coming in and wearing it. Hadn't been retired or anything like that, so there wasn't anything. And Campbell said, trust me, this kid will earn it. And turns out that, you know, his stats are right up there. Troy Davis was the – if I wanted to do a folk hero type of book on an Iowa State guy, it would be Troy Davis. Did you watch him at all? Do you remember?
Of course.
Yeah.
I remember Troy Davis really well.
Total freak.
I remember with the Saints too. Actually, I was kind of disappointed in his NFL career because I always root for guys from sort of undersized and, you know, not like a power, school. And he had a good NFL career. And then it's funny. You were just talking about him and I Googled him to see what he's doing now. And of course, the story about him driving drunk in 2016 comes up, and that's
yeah, I was there that night, not with him, but in Ames, I remember that whole thing going down. It's not a great deal, but it's kind of the same type of deal with Bo, though, where he was at that era where a lot of the stuff he did, and I'm not to this point in the book yet. I'm not going to be one of those podcasters that lies to you and says that they're done with all 500 pages yet, because I'm not. I'm just getting started.
Okay.
But a lot of the stuff that he did that made him such a legend, like, we don't necessarily have video of and stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the Troy Davis deal. Like, people will tell Iowa State fans who are young about all this incredible stuff the guy did. Well, show it to me, and you can't. It makes it complicated.
It also makes it more fun. The whole legend and sport thing is really cool. I mean, like, Bo Jackson really did ridiculous things. Like, his speed was ridiculous. His strength was ridiculous. But the thing is, when you apply stuff to video, no matter what, it always loses a little of its luster. So the, you know, folklore and telling stories about guys, and Troy Davis did this around, blah, blah, blah. Breece Hall could never do what he did. Like, that's really fun, and it's cool, and it builds up. In a way, it builds up images in people's minds that they all of a sudden can picture Troy Davis doing things, even if he didn't quite do it that way. You know, I love mythology. I love not knowing whether Babe Ruth pointed in the World Series against the Cubs. I mean, I think he did not, but maybe he did. And that's kind of cool. It'd be much better than seeing, like, you look, we found long lost video and it's him and he's scratching his nuts. He's not actually pointing to the outfield, you know, like,
yeah,
that would be, yeah,
that'd be cool too.
That would be kind of cool.
I mean, I'd sign up for that. One thing that I didn't know this, because I always compare Deion Sanders to Bo, like, in my mind, child of the 90s.
Yeah.
I didn't, they had, like, beef, according to your book. Like, is that accurate?
Yeah, they had beef in the Bo's, you know, Bo's already made it and he's enormous. And Deion comes along and he's super cocky, and Bo is not cocky. I mean, that's one thing. He's confident. He can be standoffish. He can be boorish, but he's not cocky. And Deion comes along and he's super cocky. And Bo's like, basically says, someone needs to teach this guy a lesson. Like, you can't be this cocky. And Deion took that the wrong way. And Bo would talk trash about Deion. And then Deion would reply and say, I don't know why this old man is talking to me this way. And now they're friends. It's fine. But it was, okay. You know, it was just that Bo was he was unique and he was one of a kind. And all of a sudden you're no longer one of a kind. You're two of a kind.
Okay. So you called up Bo Jackson to not really pitch him the book, but you wanted him to be a part of it, like any journalist would. And how did that go? Cause he didn't end up, he said he didn't want to participate in the book, but what was it like just calling up Bo Jackson, and how did that conversation go?
So I actually sent him a letter and some books, making my pitch why I would love to talk to him. And he called me. This is 2020, so the heart of the stay-at-home pandemic time period. And he was like, hey, this is Bo Jackson. And I was like, hey, this is not Bo Jackson. He was actually great. We talked at length. He was really cool. He was like, I don't mind you doing this, but I get asked all the time about this stuff. I don't really want to help, or, you know, whatever. And I was like, that's fine. And I always say, just a quote, like, I got really lucky because Bo Jackson's autobiography in 1990, written by Dick Schaap, before Dick Schaap passed away, he donated all his audio tapes, all his notes to the Auburn Library. And I'm pretty sure for 30 years, it just sat there and I was able to acquire it all. So all of a sudden I'm listening to Dick Schaap interviews with Bo Jackson from 30 years ago, most of which had never been used because there's a limited amount you put in an autobiography. So probably a lot of stuff he didn't want used, and probably a lot of stuff he didn't feel comfortable with back then. You know, it was a public donation. It's in the library. So I felt like I was listening to Bo Jackson tell stories, which I was.
Did you just kind of geek out doing that? Like, that?
Totally. Yeah. I'm still a nerd. But it's not a geek out in a way. If I was 15, where you're like, oh my God, Bo Jackson, it's more like, this is an amazing journalistic find. Like, this is a treasure trove of material. So that's how, and I'm like digging through it and I'm taking notes and I'm highlighting everything and just walking around with this bundle of stuff, taking it to the coffee shop and sitting there. I mean, 100%.
All right. So I wanted to, I'm kind of just starting on first book I've ever done, and it's on, this will be my 20th year of on Iowa State in a couple of years. And I want to do a 20-year memoir / historical deal on all the changes. It's whatever. I won't bore you with that. But my question is, so you said here you did over 700 interviews on this, on this book alone. And I know, like, I've never read anyone who does as much research as you do on your topics. How do you organize all that? Like, is there a, okay. Yeah. Tell me. Yeah.
Well, all right. So the first thing I do when I'm working on a book is I go to eBay and I order everything. So I get every media guide. Media guides are insanely important. So I go to eBay. I find all the Auburn football media guides, his media guides with the Raiders and the Royals and all the different teams. I found a Memphis Chicks program from his year in the minor leagues, all that stuff. You find all that. And then I'm a little old fashioned here. I still use Word. I don't know why, because I'm old. And I make a file for every single person from all these guides, not just players, but coaches, administrators, doctors, office assistants, all and on and on and on. I make this big file. And at the same time, I am doing a deep dive into like newspapers.com and different research tools, Nexus. And I make a long, basically I print out every newspaper article about Bo Jackson, involving Bo Jackson from the year I'm starting to current times. And it takes forever. It takes forever. It's a nightmare. I'm not gonna lie. It's a nightmare. And I'll basically print it all out. So I have 10,000 pages of notes chronologically of Bo Jackson articles from birth to whatever. And then when I interview people, I'll transcribe it, or sometimes I'll hire people to transcribe because it takes forever. And then I'll print those out. And then when I'm working on, let's say I'm writing the book, and let's say I'm up to his freshman year at Auburn, I have all the interviews from that time period, 82, 1982, 83. I have them all in front of me, highlighted, went through them, different notes on them. I'll have the articles in a chronological order just from that year. So maybe I'll be reading through, and it'll be the opening game, his first game of his college career. And I'll just get the clips from that, and I'll look through my interviews and see, well, who talked about that? Then I'll move on to the next game and next game. When I'm done with this freshman year, I put that all aside. Sophomore year aside. It's not, there have to be better ways to do it. Have to be. But it's the way I know how to do it. So I just do it.
Yeah, I downloaded some like book program and it just wasn't working for me. Like everybody.
Which one did you get?
It was the Word. You had to ask me.
Split screeny thing.
Yeah, it was super like this application that is super old school, but it supposedly is like for modern authors and stuff. I'm gonna pull it up here because I don't want to forget about. But it didn't work for me. Like it was just a situation where I'm like, I'm trying to use this thing. Like everybody tells me like how great it is, and it just doesn't work for me. So that's good to hear that you. But my thing is like it. Did you learn that? Like, would it take you like two books, or like how did you come up with that process? I guess
I just sort of developed it on my own. I mean, it's an extension of what I was doing at Sports Illustrated, just a million times thicker.
Yeah,
and like. Just being honest, like the first book I wrote made the bestseller list. And I thought, well, that worked. And then you do it again and you do it again and you adjust and you add little things. But like, I've tried to go fully digital. I mean, environmentally, it'd be much better. I recycle everything, but still it'd be much better. But I just can't have like five things on the screen at once, like this document and this document. I just can't do it. I like having paper in front of me. I like highlighting. I just do. It makes me, I'm relatively adaptable to modern, to modern times, you know, but like it's, I don't know, it's rough.
Scrivener is the one.
Oh, yeah.
It was the one that I was trying. I'm watching YouTube videos on it, and I'm just like, I am a total idiot because I can't figure this damn thing out, and it's taking me longer than it should. What is, what's your favorite Bo Jackson story after doing this book?
I mean, I kind of like, his junior year at Auburn, he was playing baseball, and they played at, it was the first night game in the history of the University of Georgia. And it's a big deal at Georgia. It's a packed stadium. First night game. And Bo is playing right field. And behind the right field fence, there's this thing called Kudzu Hill. It's all these kudzu vines, which is a southern sort of thing. But on this hill are all these drunk fans, and they're just taunting the shit out of Bo Jackson. First at bat, flies out. Fans just give him grief nonstop. Second at bat, he hits a home run that hits the lights. This is 39 days before The Natural comes out. He hits the lights, and the hardest hit ball anyone there has ever seen. Bo runs back out to right field. All the fans start doing the bowing motion toward him. His next at bat, home run. Bat after that, home run. His final at bat of the night, he doubles, and he gets booed by the fans because he just I just love that. It's so folk-y, and yet I have so many people verifying that story.
There was something in the notes about that a plane got stopped in Iowa and he tried to like break open a beer vending machine.
He
that popped to me because it was in Iowa. So I'm like, oh, I want to check this out.
It was Des Moines. Yeah. He was White Sox 1991, returning from California. And someone tells me the plane catches on fire. Now I know the plane caught on fire. It's an American West flight, chartered flight, plane catches on fire. Players are freaking out. Everyone's scared, yelling, screaming, praying. And all of a sudden, the cockpit door opens and out comes Bo Jackson, who'd been with the pilots. And he's like, all right, everyone, it's cool. It's calm. They got it under control. So I have this whole story, heroic Bo Jackson. But then someone said, no, you got it wrong. Someone on the flight said Bo Jackson was sitting in his seat. And when the plane caught on fire, he ran up to the cockpit to help people. And I said, because it's Bo Jackson, both can be true. But the thing that's undeniable true is 3:30 in the morning, emergency landing, Des Moines, Iowa. They get off the plane. There's a kiosk that's closed and there's a keg with a lock on it. And Bo Jackson picks up the keg, right hand, breaks open the lock, starts pouring beer for everyone. And I always say the mystique of Bo Jackson is, where did he get cups? Like, where'd the cups come from? You're pouring the beer. It's amazing. Where'd you get the cups? So, yeah, it's a crazy story.
Reminds me of the Wade Boggs, how many like beers and like fried chicken he would eat.
Oh, yeah.
On a plane. You ever heard that one before?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
that's the legend one. Okay. So we only have a few minutes left. Do you have a favorite book that you've done? Mine's the Bonds one, 'cause it was the first one, but
which is amazing, 'cause nobody names that as a favorite. I would say they all have, you know, they're all moments in my life and they all represent different things in my life, but I'll hear your list. I'll tell you what, give me the list. I'll give you a comment on each one if you want.
I have my top five. It was Bonds first.
Okay.
I'll
tell you with Bonds. He's a miserable human being and a real asshole. At least he was at the time, but it was the first book where I really thought about like what makes someone fascinating is how they became an asshole. You know, like how did you become an asshole? And that was what I really dug into with that. Like, having almost empathy for him because he was raised by wolves.
The Cowboys book was number two for me.
I mean, I'll never look at Charles Haley and not think about masturbating again. Not me masturbating, Charles Haley masturbating. Yeah.
And my dad's a Cowboys fan. So like, again, like I grew up on those teams. The Three Ring Circus, I think, would be number three for me.
Oh yeah. I that book was really hard. And it also came out right after Kobe's death. And I was truly concerned that there was going to be this major backlash. And there really wasn't, because I think people knew.
People get it.
People knew his flaws. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of these, too, it's like I'm going to name ones that were in my time, like where I was watching these guys more so. The USFL one was probably four for me.
Because you didn't grow up with it.
Yeah, like I didn't grow up with it, but still, like some of the stories in that thing are so crazy. And then, but I'm reading this, Jeff, almost like, oh my God, like the 45th president of the United States was doing this shit. Like that's how I was reading the majority of the back half of that book. I was thinking about it more from that aspect.
It's a guidebook of Trump. I mean, it's a guidebook of Trump. That book, everything Trump did in the USFL, he wound up doing as president. And it's funny because as I was working on that book, he was running and I kept saying to people, he's a con man. Like, he's just a con man. Everything he did, he's lying to you. If you who think he's great, he's lying to you. He lied to the US of our owners. He lied to TV executives. He lied to players. He's just a liar. And it was infuriating having all this knowledge and knowing it and screaming it and nobody really listening.
Did that kind of fuel you a little more, just like politically? Did it make you more opinionated just because you had this trove of research on this guy and all this stuff? And then you're watching half of our country almost worship him.
I'll tell you something funny is I'm from New York and people think New Yorkers don't like Trump because we're generally a liberal bunch. But we all just know we can recognize a con man when we see one. Like, New Yorkers grow up kind of savvy and kind of whatever. And we, you know, like, it was so, we always knew he was a con man. He just was a harmless con man, right? He was always a harmless con man. So it was funny seeing him lie about stuff and exaggerate, because it wasn't, who gave a shit if he was exaggerating casino numbers, you know, or like the biggest TV show, blah, blah. So we just knew he was a con man. So I was always politically active. I just couldn't believe the rest of the country fell for this absolute fraud. I couldn't believe it. Still can't.
Yeah. Well, that was my biggest takeaway from the, I know that that wasn't why you wrote the book, but man, it really popped for me.
I appreciate that. I love that book. I love that experience. I was told not to write that book. It won't sell, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, it's not my biggest seller, but I did in a year, which is fast for me. I grew up loving that league. It was, for me, I was a joy.
What's your biggest seller?
It's going to be the Bo Jackson book. Bo Jackson book had enormous first week sales. Awesome. I've never sold more books, but I'd say the biggest is The Bad Guys Won, my Mets book.
I've not read that one.
Oh man.
I need to.
I'm just kidding.
One.
I'm just kidding. No, you can, you know,
I'm a Braves fan. I'm a Braves
You're
fan.
You're a Braves fan?
Yes. It's TBS, man. I grew up in the middle of Iowa. I was a fan of whoever I could watch on TV. Generally how I am with sports. I was a Bulls fan because they were on WGN every night.
Yeah.
And, you know, helped to have Michael Jordan at the time. Yep. I also had the Favre book on here, and because I grew up hating him, being a Vikings fan, and then he comes on over and tries to ruin our lives with that NFC championship game.
He's an asshole. He, his whole, like, the current thing going on where he allegedly robbed all this welfare money in this, the state of Mississippi, which is the poorest state in America, is so disgusting and so disturbing. I recently said on social media, don't even read the damn book. Like, don't waste your time learning about this scumbag. And I actually mean it. Like, he's just a dick.
I think you retweeted my friend, Sage Rosenfels. I think
you know Sage.
Really good friends with Sage. Yeah, he's on my podcast network. He does me and Sage just interviewed Ricky Williams a couple weeks ago together. It was incredible. Oh. I mean, talk about an experience that was to get Ricky on a podcast and just let him just kind of go unfiltered. It was awesome. But yeah, Sage put out, because Sage was Favre's backup that year.
Yeah.
In Minnesota. And Sage tweeted something like, you know, I've done okay for myself, not robbing poor people or taking money from the rich guys. It was hilarious.
Sage is my favorite kind of former athlete because, like, he doesn't feel indebted to anyone. He doesn't feel like he has to protect the logo. He's just an honest guy. You know who else is like that? Ryan Leaf is kind of like that too. There's something about being liberated that really is, you know, I love that stuff. Love.
Leaf could have a book written on him, couldn't he?
Yes. I actually think it might sell too. I think in his case, it'd be better as an autobiography because I think he'd be a good guest to have on different shows.
Yeah, no doubt about that, because he had some demons, man, and then fighting back from those. And
I love that guy. I would rather spend time with him than Peyton Manning, and I have no problem with Peyton Manning, but I just think Ryan Leaf has lived a much more interesting life.
Well, this is fascinating to me. I want to let you go, but I want to encourage people to buy the book, The Last Folk Hero, The Life and Myth of Bo Jackson. It went on sale the last week of October, so get out and buy it.
Finest book ever written, just to be clear.
You just said it's going to be your number one seller. So that's.
Yeah, it's actually the greatest book ever written. And no one has ever written a better book.
I appreciate it.
So buy the greatest book. Buy the greatest book that's ever been written.
Do it. Perfect for Christmas time coming up as well. Thank you, man.
Or Hanukkah,
whatever. Yeah. Whatever you celebrate. Or just buy it for somebody to sit around.
How many Jews in Iowa?
Not many.
How many of us you have?
I can't imagine there are many.
Yeah.
I grew up like you know, it's funny because I live in the city now. Well, not just outside the city, but my 3-year-old, I was talking to a relative about this over the weekend. We didn't have any minorities growing up in my town. None. Like it was just, you just didn't see anything different. And my daughter, when I pick her up from daycare, there'll be like 3 black boys that are taking care of her and she's hugging them. And then she's got Hispanics that are her teachers during the day. And it's just like, my kids will grow up in a world where it's just completely different than how I did.
I grew up in the same world you did, basically, except in upstate New York in a very rural town. And I think whenever I see people politically these days sort of bemoaning diversity, I'm always like, you don't get it. Like, you actually don't get it. Like, you can't possibly get it. Whenever I'm in New York City, as an example, or LA or wherever, and you look around and it's this rainbow coalition and you can get Ethiopian food over here and you can get Greek food over here and you can get Jamaican food here. It's just, life is so much more interesting that way. So I'm good for you. Yeah.
Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me on.